Columbia Morning on News Talk 1400 KFRU. Columbia Mayor Brian Treese joins us now to talk about the city council meeting tonight and maybe anything else that is related to city governance. It's good to see you. How are you?
Good morning, David.
After you approved the Unified Development Code last meeting, you don't have anything to do now, right?
It seems like a light agenda. You know, and that was the first zoning reform that the city has adopted in the last 50 years and really strengthened neighborhood protections and increased parking requirements downtown. And one of my pet issues was a sufficiency of services test that requires the community development director to sign off that we have adequate electricity and water and sewer and fire hydrant sidewalks before development occurs so that we have the appropriate infrastructure in place.
It was also pointed out by some that Friday was the final day of the hold or moratorium or no development downtown?
I'd call it a temporary administrative delay. And really, when I was elected, you know, that Columbia had developed so fast that we were at risk of running out of infrastructure. And, you know, I thought it was appropriate to ask council to join me in taking a breath. Let's level the playing field, take a pause, and give the Planning and Zoning Commission the time they needed to make their final decision on the Unified Development Code, and then give the City Council the time we needed in five public hearings to adopt that. And that expired naturally on Friday. I don't know if there's already projects in the pipeline or not, but I do think it probably gave people the to the extent we were inadvertently contributing to a housing bubble, I thought it was important to take a break and let the zoning catch up with the projects.
Let me ask you about a housing bubble, mm-hmm. because I and you, we live close enough to downtown that we see the downtown development. I had no idea that the building just north of the Missouri United Methodist Church was going to be as huge as it is.
It's overwhelming.
That is a huge building. And right. I ask anyone who hasn't been downtown lately to go down. I can't remember. It's 9th and Elm. It's 9th and Locust, I think. Unbelievably big building.
Yeah, it's 10 stories. It's the maximum that could be built. It would have been built taller if they could have. And, you know, there are offsets for parking there that that aren't beginning to touch the demand that is going to be created there. Of course, I get my hair cut at Tiger Barbershop. I talk to those guys every few weeks, and you know their business is atrophied because no one can find a parking. The noise, there's huge impacts. That project also drove my desire to have a sidewalk and traffic inconvenience fee to compensate taxpayers for the loss of use while that project is under construction. But, you know, to me, that is probably the best illustration of why our zoning code was out of whack, that make sure that we have the appropriate scale, preserve opportunities for small business owners, have adequate parking in place, and now we have that moving forward.
Well, you do, but not before that will be done. And then a little bit further west and south, where Bingles used to be.
The old Casablanca.
That has not taken its height yet, but that's going to be a huge building.
No, but I did notice there they have two stories of parking.
Yes. They have
underground parking, which everybody, amazing, David, everybody said, oh, it's impossible. It's too expensive to do underground parking. And yet they're doing two decks of parking. So good for them. They're also going to be more focused on one and two bedroom units instead of the four bedroom, four bath type multi-family.
Then let's go to Providence, just a little bit south of Stewart, and before you reach Rollins,
Turner and Providence.
There are a lot of rooms there too, which I understand. Your predecessor loved the idea of this being built right there next to campus. This is not a University of Missouri project, but obviously it's geared to University of Missouri students. I don't understand. Those three projects are huge, and I don't know who's going to live there, or if those are filled, who's going to be empty?
Well, and here's why this issue is important to taxpayers. The city of Columbia makes certain investments either through the form of bonds or rates to improve the infrastructure necessary to serve these units. Okay, so take the Rise, for example. what used to be Britches and Tonic, you know, one-story buildings with maybe one not-so-public bathroom in the back for employees, right, is now a 1,000-bed, 1,000-bathroom, 1,000-flushes unit with no commensurate improvement in the sewer or electrical capacity. So when we make bond investments or rate investments to upgrade those utilities and those ratepayers do not materialize, it's the taxpayers of Columbia that are left holding the bag to make those improvements, okay? So when I was elected just a year ago today, the university quickly announced that they had a 2,600 student decline in enrollment. They were closing three dormitories, and here we have all these units coming online that were already in the pipeline. And that, you know, this is not, look, I support the free market, but this is not a free or fair market. When we're subsidizing the utilities and subsidizing the parking and subsidizing, you know, the cost of construction by giving them use of our sidewalks and streets. And so that's why I thought it was appropriate to let our zoning code catch up with and our utility infrastructure catch up with that development.
Just interesting to look at it and say, where are the people going to come, knowing that there has been a drop-off in enrollment and wondering, okay, if they're not students, who are we attracting and how? I mean, I like the idea that Columbia is an attractive place to live, and I think many of us have said yes. That's why we've been here and have made this our home. But goodness.
I agree. And this is, look, this is a good problem to have. I want growth in this town. I want more students in this town. Every student, we think, represents about $100,000 a year to Columbia's economy. But at the same time, I want to make sure that we're also attracting seniors and young professionals and retirees that want to live in a dynamic, vibrant, creative downtown space. And there are now incentives in that zoning reform that incentivize those types of smaller units, you know, where you might have 10 or fewer apartments or 10 or fewer bedrooms, that I hope is going to attract a different mix of that population.
If we fill those three projects that we just mentioned, and then you look south of town near Phillips Lake,
yeah,
and what's being built there that people see along Highway 63, we're growing a lot.
Yeah, and look, headline just a week or two ago was that Columbia is one of the second fastest growing city in the Midwest, and I've always said our population is supposed to double in the next 30 years. We have to be prepared for that growth. I think the zoning reform was a major component of that. I think the infrastructure upgrades that that we're making are also part and parcel of being prepared for that growth. You know, it's all of this is good news for our economy, but it does represent the changing face of Columbia that I think concerns many.
Mayor Brian Treese is our guest. Caller, you have a question or comment? Hi.
I do. David, good morning. And Brian, happy anniversary.
Thanks.
You know, David, you made a comment about where are the people going to come from, and really being involved in the construction industry for probably four decades in this town. I can recall us saying that back in the 80s when we had the duplex boom, and they were everywhere, and we kept thinking, where could they possibly come from? So I think as we look at this, the migration is just from our rural, more rural areas where the duplexes were built, and they're coming back into the town. So I think we just see the population, this it's pretty transient within the confines of where we are. But Brian, to your point on the infrastructure, you know, that puts a whale of a strain on all of those utilities you were talking about. And
it sure does if you live downstream, right, John?
Oh, my gosh, yeah, for sure. But I do want to, just a real quick topic. I know probably nothing can be done. The fireworks Friday night, too loud, too long, too late. It's just, I know the University of Missouri lives by their own rules, but we have dogs that are still traumatized just by any kind of noise. And I don't know. I just want to log that complaint.
All right. Thanks.
Point well taken.
Do they have to get permission to shoot off fireworks?
I don't think so. I mean, they're exempt from zoning. They we do provide fire service to them, but we don't sign off on to my knowledge, that is not a permitted function, nor is it required.
And that's
it is a permitted function.
Yeah,
they may be exempt from that requirement.
Caller, hi. You're on KFRU.
Yeah, I want to make a comment about the Forum Boulevard fiasco about making part of it a
The road diet is what they're talking about.
Anyway, the we as voters voted on widening that. I think it's like a mile of road, and it still hasn't been done. Do you know why?
I don't know why, and I'll check to see where we are in the capital improvement plan. But you know,
I hope it's not going to be like the sewer project out west of town.
From my perspective, and you know, from my perspective, that concept to narrow Forum to one lane is a non-starter. I mean, I think this abstinence-only car theology really doesn't work. And it's part of our responsibility to make sure that people can get to and from work efficiently and safely. And that being said, I think when we do widen Forum, there's plenty of opportunity there to add a bike lane and make sure that there are effective modes of transportation for everybody, whether that's walkers or runners or bikers. Look, we still are a society where the south part of Columbia has to get downtown or to the north part of town, and we need to facilitate the smooth and orderly flow of that traffic.
We need to again mention that the road diet topic was just a very early preliminary suggestion. You have nothing on your plan right now to change that.
I mean, there is no report or ordinance or contract or anything to try that, and I would be opposed to that.
Let me ask you briefly, if you can summarize what's going on as far as the conversation. I think some people know what's happening with water conversation as far as the future of water supply in this community. I know the Tribune picked up on that issue from the agenda as its preview story over the weekend. But can you summarize for us why there's so much talk about the water supply and water that's provided by the city to its citizens?
Well, I'm hypersensitive to this issue, and I think we all should be after the Flint, Michigan incident just 12 months ago. You know, water's one of the basic functions of government is to provide those necessary infrastructure like water and electricity and to the caller's point, transportation. But when it comes to water, that is such an important function of life and that we need to do everything we can to make sure that that water supply is clean and safe and of the best quality. I know that the Water and Light Department takes that seriously. They have proposed a new water bond in 2018 that would upgrade our water treatment plant. I think at issue is how the city tests the, and I'm probably going to butcher the science behind it, the hydrochlorides and how they settle those chlorine and what they use to do that. So the Water and Light Department has proposed what I believe to be a very robust water planning group, water working group that's on tonight's agenda that I think has folks from both within the city, outside the city, those that have been critical of the city's testing. And I want to make sure that we accommodate that dissenting opinion and encourage that type of constructive criticism so that we can showcase that we are not only following what DNR requires in terms of how we test and treat our water, but what the industry standard is and how we how we're protecting the effluent that may go into our water table and how we are extracting that water to put it into our school district's drinking fountains and home faucets.
With that being said, you don't have any misgivings about the safety of our water as someone who would turn on the tap and go and get a cup of drinking water from it right now?
I want to be very careful that we're doing everything we can to make sure that water is treated adequately and properly. I have asked that very question of staff. There have been, you know, national outsiders that have come in here and questioned that. I take those concerns very seriously, and that's why I want to make sure that we have a water planning group that is going to look at all of those issues. I'm not an expert. I'm not a water. In a past life, I did work for a water treatment plant for 3 summers while I was in college, so I know a little bit about how water gets treated. But that's I am not an engineer, and I want to make sure that those scientists and advocates and people that are smarter than I are taking a look at that and answering that question for us, David.
Have they given you peace of mind now at this current situation?
Yes, the issue is when we take those quarterly tests, we are adequate. The quality is good. I think what the outsiders have pointed to is that there are a series of spikes in, you know, these hydrochlorides or whatever, you know, they may be, and how those get aggregated, because we're not just drinking the water every 45 days or every 90 days when that test is taken. We all consume water every single day. And if there are spikes in those days, how is that accommodated? Is that a problem? Is it dissipated? Is there a health risk? And again, after Flint, Michigan, we have to take this very seriously, and I do.
Let me ask you a couple of things before we're out of time. I think you're the first mayor in the last three that has a full-time job.
I mean, do.
You are not retired.
No.
Previous two mayors, I think, were either, I think in Darwin Heineman's case, when he first became mayor, I think he was still practicing law,
right,
but maybe was able to, as self-employed lawyer, adjust what he needed. So with that in mind, you were doing your job, as I read the story last week that was put in the Tribune about for a client when you testified in Jefferson City in regard to proposed legislation that would allow school districts to work out with public transportation the getting students to and from school, correct?
Right. That's right. And let me ask you, David, I mean, have you heard about this concept? I mean, have any of the school district candidates talked about this or the school board?
No, I have not heard any candidates say this. I will say, though, if you talk to people who have been in this community maybe 60 years ago, they rode public school. They rode public buses to school at that point in time.
That's right.
I understand the world has changed since then.
And the reason this law was put into place was to prohibit segregation, where white kids would ride the school bus and poor kids would ride the city bus. And, you know, that being aside, I think we're in a different era now,
mm-hmm,
but that bill is not just a Columbia issue. It's a statewide issue. And I haven't encountered any parents in Columbia that want to be able to put their school kids, their students, on a city bus to get to and from school every day. And I think we need to be very careful that, you know, school buses have crossing arms, they have stop signs, oncoming traffic has to yield to them. You know, sex offenders can't live within 1,000 feet of a school bus stop. Those same protections don't exist when it comes to municipal buses. And so I want to be very careful that we're not doing anything that inadvertently puts our kids in harm's way, and I'm not going to shy away from that.
You don't. Do you have to make a distinction then, having said that, between your job and your mayorship?
I did make a distinction.
Yeah.
In fact, I take conflict of interest very.
But as mayor, it would make sense, from what you just said, for me to hear a mayor of a large city to say, I have a concern with that legislation.
And in this case, no one had talked to the city about it, and the city council hadn't taken a position on it, so I didn't feel like I could do that. I take conflict of interest very seriously, and so I did what is recommended. I made a transparent disclosure at a public hearing as to who I was representing and what my position was. And to me, that is the best protection against any type of real or perceived conflict.
Related to that, but just barely, is people would then say, how about the mayor endorsing candidates for the election tomorrow? Your thoughts about that? I mean, we lived in, I think for a while, kind of a fairy tale world where people did not look at city governance from council people as being political. It always has been political, but I wonder what your feelings are in regard to this.
I don't think it's political. I'd like to think it's not. I mean, there's two sitting council members today that endorsed my opponent in the mayor's race last year. That hasn't impaired our ability to work together, and frankly, has never even come up in terms of our collegiality. You know, and I think you see elected officials all the time endorsing or opposing certain bond issues or candidates. And, you know, I'm also a Fifth Ward voter and a Fifth Ward constituent. I think it's still a free country for my wife and I to contribute and support someone. And you know, I really look at the city council as a very cohesive team right now. And I have no reason that regardless of who wins tomorrow, that's going to change.
You would not have done that haphazardly. You would not say.
I wouldn't say that I did it intentionally, but yeah. I also didn't. I don't do anything haphazardly,
yeah.
David. You know that.
I know that. Any other comments on this? As people maybe chew on this before tomorrow's voting?
Not really. I mean, I think we're so fortunate to have so many qualified candidates out there, and you know, I've spoken to each of those candidates. We had a candidate orientation on January 11th, and. And as I told them, you know, regardless of whether you win or lose, I hope you continue to stay involved, either as an advocate for your neighborhood association or serve on a board or commission. And if you're fortunate enough to win, campaigns are hard. And if you're fortunate enough to win, you're going to bring a unique perspective and represent your ward to the best of your ability. And I think that's all we can ask for.
Appreciate your time, as always. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Mayor Brian Treese has been our guest. This is Columbia Morning at KFRU.